4, the District and Hammersmith and City lines. This is a Central Line train to...
Juicebox Music Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Juicebox Music Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter McClamrock, and with me on the other line, as always, fondling the thighs of forfeit, it's Nicholas Moreau.
What's up, Nick? Hunter? What's up? Fondling, that's me. That's me, just fondling. I'm doing well, man. It feels like I haven't spoken to you in a while because so much has happened, man.
The world is moving at a rapid pace.
I know. I was thinking about it this morning. Since we last talked, Kanye had a meltdown on TMZ. Elon Musk is dating Grimes. FYF was canceled. Nine Inch Nails is a new EP and tour. And a member of Frightened Rabbit has disappeared.
Yeah. I mean, there's something new every day. It's like the Trump administration is in affecting the music industry.
I know. I mean, some weeks we're like, there's not much news to talk about. And this week it's like, where do we even start?
And we don't even know, you know, some weeks we don't know what records to talk about. Next week we have both Beach House and Arctic Monkeys on the same day.
Oh, that's going to be a lot.
What are two boys to do?
We might have to do two episodes for those.
If the people demand it, we'll do it.
Okay. I think they demand it. I just heard it outside there.
Oh, there. I know that you don't really record this podcast in front of like a mirror that looks out onto the fans in the street.
Yeah, just like a Good Morning America.
Exactly. Stepped up. It's like downtown Portland. Everybody's got their Patagonia jackets on. Looking right.
Plaid.
They're probably Nike employees. So they have some kind of special shoes on that the world has not seen yet.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty much right.
Top attraction. Yeah. Well, yeah, Nick, where do we want to get started? One thing that you didn't bring up that I wanted to talk about with you is this new music video from Childish Gambino, who also has been kind of taking over the world lately. Donald Glover, he's got the Star Wars movie about to come out. Atlanta is wrapping up its second season. Excellent television show. And he had a huge hit record in the last, I think it came out in 2016 with Redbone.
Yeah.
And has an arena tour and everything. And performed on Saturday Night Live this weekend, debuting a new music video, This Is America, directed by the man who has directed most of the episodes of Atlanta and is kind of his creative partner in that. Did you get a chance to check this video out?
I did. Yeah, it's directed by Hiro Murai, I believe.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Wow. I was thinking about it this morning. I don't want to say it's the best music video of 2018 because I don't think best is appropriate. I think it's the most provoking.
It's definitely provocative. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's why this whole thing, this video exists.
Yeah. I was so uncomfortable watching it, yet I couldn't stop watching and felt like 1,000 emotions through the 4 minutes of the video. And, you know, I have a weird relationship with Childish Gambino because I saw him live in, I think, 2010 in Asheville at Moogfest at the time.
Yeah, that must have been a very different Childish Gambino than the one we're seeing now.
It really was, and it wasn't that good, and I kind of wrote him off. I was kind of like, you know, I like you in Community, you should stick to acting.
Yeah, most of my early experience with Donald Glover was seeing him at UCB Upright Citizens Brigade theater shows doing improv.
Yeah, and now I'm like, man, Donald Glover has got it all. I mean, that video is amazing, and the dancing, and I read an article actually about it on The Atlantic, and it talks about how, you know, why this video is so uncomfortable to watch. And it talks about, I'll quote here from The Atlantic, "The video is a denunciation of the distractions that keep many Americans from noticing how the world around them is falling apart." That really struck me because I really think, like, you know, the dancing is the distraction, and then in the background, these atrocities are happening, you know. mm-hmm. and pretty it's some pretty literal images, you know, when and sometimes, you know, in the video, like Donald Glover even does the atrocities between right. dances.
He commits several murders in this video.
Yeah, and the one that's the most shocking is when he mows down those nine
choir singers.
Yeah, which is kind of a direct reference to the Charleston shooting, in my opinion. And I think everybody would agree with that.
I have so many thoughts on this video and the way that it has played out in the media and the coverage that it's getting and how everybody has, you know, a hot take on it. And like you said, like it's a lot more literal than I think people are giving it credit for based on the images you see. And if you listen to the lyrics of the song, it seems like a very direct song about Black entertainment and Black celebrity and how, you know, the dancing and the singing kind of serves as a mask for all this pain and oppression that is happening in the community. Mm-hmm. And I just thought about how much attention this is getting, and why is that? Is it because he is a public figure in a mainstream way and is giving us something provocative that we don't normally get from entertainers on that level? Or is it because everything is so highly politicized now that, you know, everything needs to immediately be commented on? And a lot of people talking about how abstract this video is and how it doesn't really make that much sense. Does Donald Glover have a need to explain himself, or should we let this speak for itself? And some people saying how it's too abstract. It's a music video, for starters, that we're talking about in 2018. Music videos are the most abstract art form. They're like where you're kind of allowed to let your complete id flow. Like all the best music videos I can think of, especially during the heyday in like the 90s, they didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
What was happening in the video for Heart-Shaped Box?
Yeah. Or like Street Spirit Fade Out. Like,
yeah. So why do we need Donald Glover to explain himself?
No, I agree. I mean, I think it's a beautiful piece of art, but I also don't know that it's that it is abstract, but it's kind of pretty much on the nose. Like the title's called This Is America, the lyrics are pretty straightforward as far as like what it talks about, and then the acts of violence that happen pretty much correlate directly with the title of the song.
Your boy, you know? Kanye was pretty impressed with it too. He sent out several tweets. So maybe this is going to help him get out of the sunken place a little bit.
Yeah, I hope so.
That's been a big narrative I've seen a lot lately. Like, is Donald Glover taking Kanye's place, which is kind of a ridiculous idea in its own way.
All of it is ridiculous. All of it is clickbait. Like, I'm sure like, you know, Donald Glover and Hiro Murai like set out to do this thing I don't think they set out to do something that was going to be viral or clickbaity. They just did something that, to me, spoke to them and spoke to the truth that the song inspired them. And it just so happens that everybody's just feasting on it. And they're probably like, wow, I didn't expect that from it. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a video that's really worth watching. And we don't get music videos that, you know, people really pay attention to very often anymore at all. In some ways, it reminded me a little bit of Michael Jackson's Black and White video. And you remember the end of the video that they eventually stopped showing on MTV because they got a lot of complaints where he's smashing the car and like grabbing himself and yelping a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
It reminded me a little bit of that.
No, I agree. I agree. Actually, the video reminded me of Michael Jackson a lot, the dancing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was really good. You know, I was having this conversation with a family member of mine a couple of weeks ago when I was on vacation. And it was at the wedding we were at, and people were dancing. And my family member was talking about, you know, this person dances well, you know. And, you know, I think after a few drinks, I told him, you know, dancing is interesting because I think it's the only form of art that all of us have partaken in. Like, Not everybody writes music. Not everybody shoots acts. Not everybody sculpts. Not everybody paints. But everybody's danced. So it's this like kind of communal art, that art form that I think is beautiful. And I think, you know, Don Glover uses it in a really good way in this video.
We, of course, recognize the irony of like two white guys talking about This Is America, the video. I mean, we're and it's kind of like a, this whole thing is something that's meant to be commented on, and we don't necessarily have all the tools to do that. It's only from our own experience. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to ask you about is, did you like the song? The actual song?
Yeah, I did like the song. I actually heard the song before I saw the video. I liked the song on my way to the Kendrick. I heard the song for the first time on the way to the Kendrick show on Sunday I went to. And I liked it. And I was actually surprised it was Childish Gambino. Because again, back to my point earlier, I was like, I used to have this distaste for, you know, for Donald Glover's kind of musical side. And now, you know, with Redbone and this, I'm kind of coming around to it.
Yeah, me too. I think this is one of his better, you know, best songs. And I like Redbone a lot too. I don't think he is, you know, he's not a musician of the caliber of, you know, somebody like Kanye or Kendrick or anybody like that at this point. But who knows where he could go from here? Yeah.
I definitely think he's inspiring, though, as a person, because I think like his progression in both of his art forms has been pretty, I guess, again, inspiring and great to watch. Like, it feels like somebody that constantly works on his craft. And he seems pretty dedicated, and it's really nice to see.
He's at the top of the world right now. It kind of made me interested in going to see him when he's playing with Vince Staples here sometime in the fall.
That would be a good show.
Put that on the list.
Yeah.
So you mentioned this Kendrick show. Now, Nick, is this is Kendrick continuing his solo tour from Damn, or what's going on with him right now?
This is the Top Dog Entertainment Championship Tour. Now, I have to do something. I have to apologize to TDE. When this tour was first announced, I thought it was going to be the corniest thing ever. I thought that the idea of a championship tour, I was like, this is so corny. It kind of reminded me of the Up in Smoke tour, you know, when like early 2000s, remember with Eminem, Dre, Snoop Dogg, Exhibit, everybody.
G-Unit.
Yeah, all that stuff. And I just thought, oh, this is going to be corny. And then my friend asked me if I wanted to go. And, you know, I've seen Kendrick once, and I never seen Schoolboy Q. And SZA was is on the tour. And I was like, I'd love to see Schoolboy Q and SZA. And then seeing Kendrick is always a treat. And then I got to the show. And I didn't make the first part with Absol, I think Lance Skywalker. But I did, I got there when Schoolboy Q just started. And man, Schoolboy Q like brought the show. It was so good. The whole thing was amazing. And I have to say, like, I really understood why it's called the Championship Tour. So first of all, every set was kind of sport inspired. So Schoolboy Q arrived on a golf cart. And in the
background, is he wearing his bucket hat too?
No, he had a baseball cap. And but you know, on the there were some of the visuals on the big screen for one of the songs. I forget which song was basically all Tiger Woods fist pumps. and then SZA came on, and she arrived in a boxing ring. And sang, nice. You know, supermodel in the middle of the boxing ring, just sitting down. And she arrived to the Rocky soundtrack, which was awesome. And then, you know, she like brought it up to the next level. She was amazing. She sang most of the songs in her album and had some great back and forth with the crowd. She was very real. It felt like you were in this kind of a small venue with her. Mm. And it was, you know, what a beautiful performance. Like she can really sing. Like, so
I heard a lot of really, really good things about her performance at Coachella this year from people that I know who went. Like, that was one of the acts that people were talking about a lot. So I really would like to check her out sometime soon.
Yeah, one of the highlights was, you know, when she you know, she sang Supermodel, which is my favorite song on that album. But, you know, Drew Barrymore was really cool, and it was accompanied by just short snippets of Drew Barrymore growing up through the years, through the movies you know her from, and it was really, really, really good. And she sang The Weeknd, which was a highlight as well. And then Kendrick came on, and first of all, I'm sorry if I'm spoiling the show if you're about to go see it. I don't think it spoils anything because the performances on their own are well worth it. Kendrick came on, and I didn't realize that the screen was actually a double screen with a platform. So he came on, and he seemed to appear in the middle of the screen. Like there was a platform there. And he just had like a sense of style. He was wearing like a jacket with only one arm in the sleeve, and the rest was just hanging down. And just like, you know, he came on to this 8 minutes White Noise track. Like it was 8 minutes of White Noise before he showed up. And I think that they actually ran it back because I think he wasn't ready, because it kind of died down and started back up. And there was a guy in front of me. Shout out to the guy in front of me who recorded the whole 8 minutes. I can't wait to hear about the next time you're going to watch that. Anyway, yeah, exactly.
I mean, Kendrick Lamar has a Pulitzer now. He can do whatever he wants. That means eight minutes of White Noise to get started.
He came out to DNA. Amazing energy. And then I forget what the next song he played, but basically the background just was the screen just saying Pulitzer Kenny.
He has not commented publicly about winning the Pulitzer.
Yeah.
Your toast is ready, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go eat. All right, see you later. No, but it was an amazing performance, to be honest. Just really, 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 really good. And the reason I have to apologize is that it makes so much sense why it's called the Championship Tour. I mean, you have Schoolboy Q, who put out Blank Face, one of the best albums, in my opinion, of 2016. And then SZA puts out in 2017. Her album was, if not in the top three of most critics, like in the top 10. And then obviously Damn was, you know, what an achievement that was. And then, you know, Kendrick's record. Has he had a bad album? You know, you were talking about Kanye is the, like, most critically acclaimed artist of the last 10 years. And if, like, in 3 years, you'd probably say it's Kendrick.
Yeah, I mean, I think they definitely deserve a championship or a victory lap. Basically, Top Dog signed Kendrick when he was 15 years old, and I think he's 30 now. So, I mean, this thing has been a long time coming. I mean, but Kendrick Lamar is just one of those undeniable artists, and I've seen him live 3 times. Every single time was amazing. The first time actually was opening for Kanye on the Yeezus tour.
That's cool. I didn't know he did that.
Yeah, that was in an arena too. So that was like the first time I ever got to see him. He wasn't quite there yet, but he did really well for an opening act in an arena like that. Somebody who's kind of green at the time.
I will say, like, him and Schoolboy, like, their rapping is so crisp. Like, every lyric, maybe because I knew the songs, but like sometimes live rap can be a little messy, even though it sounds great on the record. Like, maybe the sound's not as good. But they sounded so good. So good. And what I really liked, and this is a thing I didn't realize like until like maybe 5 songs in, it was a live band, like off to the sides that was hidden. And it made the beats, like the break beats, like really, really, again, you know, tight and just allowed for a lot of improvisation from SZA to Schoolboy to Kendrick. They all used it to their advantage. So it was really cool.
Yeah, I think Kendrick has been using some kind of live band in some capacity ever since To Pimp a Butterfly. Yeah. So that's something to really look forward to in his shows.
And they were really good musicians, obviously. Like, the songs on To Pimp a Butterfly are not easy to play, no. I don't think. And then, you know, we saw him together at FYF, and I thought this was actually much better, even though I really liked Kendrick there. Maybe because I was closer, maybe because, you know, it was like Schoolboy, SZA, and Kendrick, and you know, because it's the same live band they use, the change between sets was maybe 5 minutes.
That's great.
Yeah. So
kept the night moving.
Yeah. Exactly.
Very cool.
Yeah. So I recommend everybody to go see those shows, because I don't think they're sold out, because they're playing pretty big venues. Like, this is probably about, I'd say, 16 to 20,000 people.
Yeah. Yeah, they're playing the Staples Center here, too, I think this week, maybe.
And it's really worth it, because, I mean, those three bills, you know, if you paid it individually, it would be probably around $200. But, you know, I think I only paid $80 for my ticket.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I went to a show this week, too, that definitely didn't cost $80. In a small venue here, the Moroccan Lounge, Young Fathers were in town. They did a really brief American tour, basically one very small sold out date in both New York and LA. And then they opened two shows at the Hollywood Bowl for the Yeah Yeah Yeahs and LCD Sound System on a combined bill. This is one of the best shows I've seen in a long time. You know, one of the best shows I've seen this year. Amazing energy from the three guys in the band. They're like basically a three piece augmented with a live drummer on stage. So, and just the way, and having never seen them live, just listening to their record, Coco Sugar, their new album is one of my favorites of the year so far as well. I wasn't really sure what to expect from the live experience. And, you know, they're both, all three of them are very able performers. And I was really impressed by their vocals just in general from all three of these guys. Basically, they both go between rapping and singing very, very well, and chanting, and it all kind of, whoever is kind of the central performer in that part of the song, the other vocalists kind of seamlessly accentuate the song. Like, it's a really, really cool experience. You know, they're working with a lot of pre-recorded tracks that one of the members triggers throughout the show. But it was a really inspiring show, really packed. I think this band is on the verge of something pretty, pretty special soon. They have announced some U.S. shows in the fall, playing some bigger venues. I would really recommend trying to catch them if you can.
Yeah, if you're trying to catch them in Portland, they're playing on November 14th at Wonder Ballroom. And that's definitely a bigger venue than the Moroccan Lounge where you saw them.
Here they're going to be at the Fonda this time. So
yeah, definitely bigger. Yeah.
But, you know, like, they won the Mercury Music Prize, the biggest music award in Britain on their first album. And they kind of remind me of, they're like Massive Attack and TV on the Radio had a baby. You know,
I totally agree. Yeah, I know. And that album, Coco Sugar, is really good.
Yeah, they're really, really charismatic, interesting Scottish rap rock group. I don't, that might be an accurate description, but that doesn't sound like what they sound like if that just pops in your head.
Yeah, more like, the Massive Attack label is pretty spot on to me.
Yeah, I think they supported them with their first album. They supported Massive Attack on tour.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I did have flashbacks to, I saw Massive Attack in Raleigh when I was in high school. They came through and played at the Ritz in Raleigh, North Carolina. And that is one of the most memorable, best shows. It was the mezzanine tour that I've ever seen. And I've never seen performers smoke so much weed on stage either. It was unbelievable. That show was a little cooler, a little like more downbeat than the Young Fathers, which was pretty high energy the whole time. But it harkened back to that show, which is something that I have like some of my fondest musical memories. So it was great. Listening to anything else this week, Nick? Been going back to anything or anything new in your life?
Yeah, I've listened to this Black Moth Super Rainbow album a little bit, and I'm pretty fond of it. I have to say, like, it's, you know, talking about down tempo, it's very chill and really nice to listen to around the house, and I'm really enjoying it right now. A couple of the things, actually, you know, I think I've discovered two really good cooking albums this week.
Oh.
Yeah. I was listening to the new Drinks album, mm-hmm. Hippolyte.
Yeah, Kate LeBon and Tim, what's his name, from White Fence?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know his name. But yeah, the guy from White Fence and Kate LeBon. And it's a great cooking album. It reminds me of Broadcast a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But in a pretty like very lo-fi kind of deconstructed song form.
I really like that record too. It's their second album as Drinks. I'm a big Kate LeBon fan. I wasn't too into the first record, but I really like this new one.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and do you agree on the cooking label?
Yeah, I haven't tried it, but I will.
Okay.
I think that'll work. I think it's a contender, Nick.
Yeah, I know. But
What were you cooking with it? Set the stage a little bit here.
So my daughter is really into tacos right now.
Smart girl.
So I made some tacos, you know. So she discovered like tacos, you know, we do this thing where you build your own tacos. So she's really into the building and the destroying. So. and then I found a worthy contender for cooking album of the year, my friend.
Oh no.
Wow. I think you're going to have to put it on.
It could unseat Krungbin?
I don't know. I don't know if it's an unseater, but it's up there. DJ Cozy put out an album this year called Knock Knock. And it's very different than Krungbin as far as the cooking vibe. It's more like electronic music, but pretty chill, more in the kind of K Trinada sense mm-hmm. of electronic music. And it's been a pretty big surprise to me. I'm very into it right now.
So you're cooking something maybe like a little more delicate, you know, like a Moroccan couscous with lamb or something like that. Is that the vibe I'm getting?
Yeah, exactly. I haven't made any Moroccan food, but yeah, very, very delicate flavors there. Maybe a little simmering, you know?
Yeah, like simmer it down for a little while and let it just sweat.
Exactly. I did do some red beans and rice with it, with a little sausage, you know?
Okay, so yeah, I see that. You're letting the flavors kind of meld together for a while.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, DJ Cozy is a German DJ and music producer. He released in 2013, his second album was called Amygdala. And I haven't listened to his first album, which dates back to 2005. So he doesn't really put out many studio albums, but he has some EPs and different mixtapes and kind of works with different artists here and there. So
cool.
I would definitely recommend it. Especially if you're into kind of European mole electronic music.
Good rec. I'll have to check that out for sure.
Yeah. What about you, Hunter?
For me, well, I've been traveling a little bit this week. It's been a busy time, but I've got a few things in. I was intrigued by this whole idea of an ABBA reunion. They've recorded a couple songs together and it's going to be a TV special. I think in December, sometime at the end of the year. There's also Mamma Mia 2 coming out. But something about this TV special, they're going to be holograms on it. Maybe these holograms are going to go on the road. I like knowing that the members of ABBA are still alive and in touch with each other. So I went on a big ABBA kick earlier in the week, just listening to ABBA nonstop for 2 days. Mm-hmm. Which was great. I recommend anybody do that, you know, once or twice a year. It really like recharges your batteries a little bit.
ABBA's amazing.
ABBA are amazing. They're like, the songs are incredible. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, and there's like just nonstop hits. And speaking of nonstop hits, with all this Kanye West talk lately, I had to go back and just do the whole Kanye West discography. I started, you know, starting with College Dropout all the way to Life of Pablo. So I did that this week. Pretty much flawless you know, flawless discography makes me very worried for his new album next month. If the two tracks that we've heard are any indication, I'm praying to Kanye that he doesn't actually put those tracks on the album, but you never know with him.
Are you more into old Kanye or new Kanye right now?
Like first half Kanye to second half?
Yeah.
You know, probably I'm probably into old Kanye right now because it had been a while since I had heard. I always really liked Late Registration.
Yeah,
that was his second album for a while. Was my favorite of his, and yeah, I kind of didn't give Graduation its due so much when it came out, but that's a really great album. So yeah, I think we go. I like the positive vibes on the old Kanye records are pretty great. Like, there's a lot of positivity, but he talks about his own struggles, and it's very, there's a lot of humility in it, which is something you start to see a little bit less and less from Kanye as he proceeds through his career. So, yeah, I mean, if you ever you can just block out 2018 Kanye, unless, you know, he drops a great album, All Will Be Forgiven with him, I'm sure. So, well, I think we just have to see. Let this drama play out. Like I said, when we talked about him last week, you know, he's the king of controversy. So it doesn't make sense for me to take him at his word.
Yeah.
All the time. And one other record I kind of started listening to, and I want to spend a little more time with, was kind of surprised by it, is this new solo album from Gaz Coombs, who was the singer, the front man in Supergrass. Supergrass were a 90s, 2000s, one of the kind of leaders of the Britpop scene. Most people know them from that song All Right, which was on the Clueless soundtrack back in the day. At least one of my favorite records of the late 90s, In It for the Money, which was their second album. And he's got a new solo album called World's Strongest Man. I think this is his third solo album. Named after the Scott Walker song, I can only assume. Really, it's really cool. A lot different than I thought it would be. He was so young when Supergrass started. He's still like not that old of a guy, but he's maturing into kind of something unique that's very different from Supergrass. It's kind of a record with a lot of storytelling to it. And I really like what I've heard from it so far. I'd like to hear more of it. And I wonder, you know, nobody ever talks about the relationship between Supergrass and Radiohead, but I've always found that fascinating because they're really close friends and kind of grew up together and are from the same town, Oxford. And, you know, Supergrass has supported Radiohead at different times in their career, but maybe Tom York and the boys have a little influence on Gaz these days, but it's a cool record. I'm looking forward to it, to listening to it more.
Okay. I'd have to check it out.
Yeah. So that's about it. Let's talk about the album of the week, Nick.
Oh yes. So Hunter, yes. I have a question for you.
Let me have it.
You know, earlier in the week, we were talking about which album to discuss in our kind of featured review, and I felt like I kept pressing Ice Age on you. Did this pressing, did it kind of give you an opinion onto how I'm going to feel about this album?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you pressed this album on me a little bit, because I have some feelings about Ice Age as a band already. You know, this is their fourth album, and they've been around. I think that first record came out in like 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
So, 2011, yeah. So it's been a minute. And you know, I'm kind of surprised that Ice Age still exists. Mm-hmm. I listened to their first album. They seemed really cool. You know, these Danish, really young, they're like 17 at the time, like really good looking Danish guys in a really shouty punk band. I liked everything behind it. I just couldn't get into their songs that much. And then I just didn't pay attention to the last couple albums. I heard some good things about their third album, that their sound was maturing. And and what really got me to check this one out is Sky Ferreira's on one of the songs, Painkiller.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of her. I should say I'm a big fan of the one album that she's put out. She's been having a lot of trouble, I think, with the sophomore record, getting it approved by the record label or whatever. She's been working on it a long time. But she's great. So I wanted to hear her contribution to this and see what my feelings about Ice Age were in their new incarnation. A lot of Nick Cave comparisons I was seeing out there. It just seemed like a good time to dive in and check them. They're on Matador Records now, which is also interesting. It's post-punk kind of evolution for them. I haven't been checked in with them on a couple of albums. Is this kind of the direction they've been going since the debut?
Yeah, I think that direction really changed on their third album called Plowing Into the Field of Love. This is where a lot of people gave the Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds comparison. Before that, on New Brigade and You Are Nothing, I think it's more of a definitely more kind of punk, teetering into hardcore at times. Mm-hmm. I think that they were, you know, talk about a band that was critically lauded. I mean, all four of their albums, all three of their first albums were just met with huge praise by critics. And so, like, for a band that was so young, like you said, it was a kind of an achievement, especially for a band, you know, coming from Denmark, you know, in the US, they seem to have quite the following.
They just actually did a residency here in LA at a new venue, a very small new venue downtown. They played every week for a month.
Yeah, called Gold Digger, right?
Yeah, Gold Digger.
Mm-hmm. And it used to be a strip club, from what I heard.
That sounds right.
Yeah. And so they did you know, before the album came out, they did three residencies. They did one in New York, one in LA, and one in Tokyo and Kyoto, kind of a split residency.
Oh, weird.
And they kind of had an interesting visual element to it, from what I read. In Tokyo, for example, they had what seemed like all these lights seemed to, like, look like butterflies were flying all over them, which is interesting given the music in a way. So anyway, maybe we should just dive into the record here, Hunter. So, my question was, how do you think I feel about this record?
I have a good feeling that you enjoyed this record, Nick.
Very much so, Hunter. I'm really high on this record.
Nick, for those of you who don't know, pretty much likes anything that comes from continental Europe.
No, but you know, very much like you, like, I wasn't the biggest, I liked everything about Ice Age. I liked some of the songs on their first two records, but I really enjoyed the turn they took into their third album. And from what I read after the third album, the reason it took them 4 years to record another one, you know, it took them 4 years to record another one, but I think Elias, the lead singer, is only 26.
Yeah. There had been a pretty big gap.
Yeah. And so, you know, the reason was that the third album is the album they felt the most satisfied with. And so the reason they would kind of go back to the studio right after an album is because they were so dissatisfied with it by the time it came out that they felt like they needed to record something else. But from what I read in interviews, is they were so satisfied with it that they didn't feel a need to record another album for a while. And then eventually they kind of got dissatisfied with it. But yeah, this album, I love everything about it. I think, you know, the first track, Hurrah, it's just kind of a weird, it starts with a roar about kind of war and the fact that we're always going to be at war. It kind of starts with a, you know, punch to the stomach, and it doesn't let go from there. Like you mentioned, Painkiller is the second track. I think that's one of the best songs of 2018.
Yeah, I would say Painkiller is definitely the standout song on here, and for me, probably the best song Ice Age has ever written.
Yeah.
That I've heard. I told you, I guess I didn't hear two of their albums.
Yeah. I think it's a great song. I think Sky Ferreira's vocals, you know, backing vocals, are just really efficient, and, you know, it'd be so cool to see them both on stage together. So that song, you know, if you to me, if you retain anything from this review, is go check out that song. I think it's just a hit. It's really good. Then, you know, there's this song, there's this song called The Day the Music Dies, which usually is a reference to Buddy Holly and
the Big Gipper, plane crash.
Yeah, the Big Popper and all that, you know, yeah, the plane crash. But I don't think this song actually is any reference to that event. But that song, I thought, is, you know, one of the poppier songs on the album, and surprisingly works really, really well. And I think something about Elias's vocals too, like the way he sings, is something that's really attractive to me. So I think this song does a really good job of showing his vocal ability.
I went on a bit of a journey with this record because, like you said, I was kind of hesitant. We were trying to decide what album to talk about this week, and you know, I kind of found Ice Age a little boring. I it's hard for me to get into like hardcore, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were obviously not a straight up hardcore band, but they were just one of those bands that seemed really, really cool, but didn't deliver on the music front, really. But, you know, I started seeing some more things about this record. It seemed kind of interesting, and we decided to talk about it. I started listening to it. I was initially, like, very impressed with it. You know, just it was just not what I was expecting. And the songwriting was on a different level than the last time I had really listened to Ice Age, which was basically their debut. Obviously, it had been many years. So, you know, they've really improved in terms of songwriting. And I listened to this record 3 or 4 times. I was really into it. And then by, like, the next few listens, I started to get annoyed with it. I started to kind of lose the plot with the album a little bit. And I think a lot of it has to comes down to the lyrics, which I just don't like. I do not like him as a lyricist. And I feel like it might have to do with me thinking about him writing in English. And when I look at the lyrics on the page, like grammatically everything is correct, but the vocabulary he chooses to use sometimes takes me out of it, if that makes any sense. Like, he just uses words that I wouldn't expect to hear in a song. And while that seems like it should be a good thing, it kind of takes me out of the songs because I have trouble following it. But, you know, lyrics don't always matter to me that much. But when there's something about the lyrics that make them stand out to me, then that can affect the way I think about the music as a whole.
Do you have a specific example?
Well, Fondling the Thighs of Forfeit. I guess I can't brush aside. I'm waiting for the day the music dies. You know, I can look at almost any of these songs, actually. It has, you know, passages here or there that are just strike me as odd. And I guess what the effect is, it's one that it makes it hard for me to connect emotionally with their music. Whereas it sounds really good. And some of the songs, especially Painkiller, which I do think is a really great song. There are like a lot of, there's memorable parts to these songs. I think they would probably be really great live. I kind of wish I had made it to one of their shows in their residency. But on a personal level, I don't get that much from it.
Okay. You know they're from Denmark, right?
I do know they're from Denmark. And most people from Denmark speak better English than me.
That's true. I've heard him in interviews, and his English is really, really good. It's interesting you feel that way. I mean, I feel quite the opposite. I this is one of the first records. Oh no, that's not true. But one of the few records this year where I've actually read the lyrics to every song.
Oh really?
Yeah. And I find him to be actually an incredible lyricist. And I'm not saying that to be contrarian. I just, I just, this is how
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. You know, it's, and I think like a lot of times his lyrics have been lauded as like amazing, I guess is a word I would use. But yeah, no, I found it cause I just wanted to hear what he was singing about a lot of time. You know, how did you feel about the track called Catch It? A lot of people are saying this is the best track on the album.
You know, that's a pretty good song. I like that little stretch of the album there, like this song and Thieves Like Us, I believe, is the next song. Again, let me look at like the lyrics to Catch It. Starts off, reeling in the line, fully saccharine, all these stagnant words which I confide. A little bit later on, he uses thereupon alarmed. It's words like thereupon and stagnant in the songs that don't flow that well for me. And I think, you know, on a writerly level, he has an impressive vocabulary. I just don't know what it means emotionally. Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, the chorus gets really simplistic. Catch it, catch it, catch it, make it real, catch it. You know, you reel it in, then you catch it.
Yeah.
So he's using like a fishing metaphor mixed with a baseball metaphor. It's like a mixed metaphor kind of thing there for me. Mm-hmm. That just makes it tough.
Yeah.
It's almost something about Ice Age is like too cool for me in a way. They're, you know, they look really cool. They have this aesthetic. I'm assuming that they're named after the Joy Division song Ice Age, just based on the fact that they seem to be obviously influenced by Joy Division and lyrically definitely by Ian Curtis. I would think there's a song called Thieves Like Us, which mm-hmm. is, I think, a reference to a New Order song.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, their whole aesthetic is very, very cool. And sometimes that leaves me a little cold, even though this is, I think, the warmest album that they put out, or maybe this one and the last one. And I think this album is going to work for a lot of people, definitely. Yeah. And I think it's going to bring, I think they're going to be a bigger draw. I think they're going to do really well at festivals. So, I mean, this is just a very personal feeling from me with my reaction to this album. It's not something that I'm going to be putting on. I tried to go running to this album. We talk about how we listen to albums, cooking, running. I tried to run to this album this morning before we recorded the podcast, and I got through the first two songs and then had to switch to something else because I was dying out there.
Because you were running too fast?
No, I wasn't running fast enough. I wasn't feeling inspired.
You know, in the Pitchfork review of this album, they talk about Richard Hell, you know, the kind of punk icon that played in television and mm-hmm. all these other bands, wrote an essay as part of before Beyond List talking about Ice Age. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
And he talks about their intelligence and anarchy and compared Elias, the lead singer, to Charles Baudelaire.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because Baudelaire probably used thereupon in a lot of his writing as well. People want.
I'm not dismissing your opinion.
Hey, you can dismiss my opinion all you want. I mean, I'm totally cool with that because my opinion is only mine. But I get that. I think people love to feel smart, and you know, we talked about a few weeks ago the band Manic Street Preachers, who have like a lot of times have crazy lyrics full of like weird intellectual things, and somehow that works for me and it doesn't work for a lot of people. So, you know, you these things, of course it's art and is subjective, but I always get the feeling sometimes with bands, it's like, because they look cool, because they're Danish, because they use big words and they have like this post-punky thing, girls like them, of course, like, mm-hmm. they're just a band, and I'm not saying this is you because I know you, and I don't think this is you at all. But I think this is the kind of band that some people could listen to and really talk about the, you know, how deep his lyrics are and how they remind me of, you know, 18th century British poetry, and sound really and be really satisfied with themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can see that. I see your stance. I mean, I think, you know, if you look beyond the lyrics that maybe, you know, don't really do it for you, I think the music, I actually thought you would come in really high on this album. just cause it's funny. Cause like when I first listened to it, I was like, man, I get such a bad seeds vibe from it, in a really good way. Like, I don't think it's a, like, we want to be Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, but it had like a freshness that I hadn't heard in a way, in that genre in a while. Mm-hmm. And I thought, knowing your love for Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, that you might come in on the same way.
Yeah. I think if we had recorded this pod 2 days ago, I probably would have been way more positive off this album, because I was really, really liking it at first. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm a person who thinks a lot to a degree where it's problematic. You know, I'm an overthinker, and I may be overthinking this album a little bit too much and may still come back around on it, because I don't believe in having definite opinions about anything, really, because everything changes. Our chemistry, our brain's chemistry changes on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. There is all sorts of things I used to not like that I like now, and vice versa. And the thing is, I think I would recommend listening to this album for sure. Yeah. Especially if any of those things sound good to you that we've been talking about, and any of these reference points, it's quality. Their songwriting is good on here. There's just, for me, I don't have the emotional connection that I would like with it. And maybe I'm asking too much from it at this point, but if I think it might work for other people, you know, thinking about, I don't know if you call it the chorus of Thieves Like Us, hush as I spill my wayward theories, I'll stack them pre-Raphaelite scaffolds. Okay. Anyway, there's a Britney Spears song called Email My Heart that I am I like more emotionally connected to than any song on this album. I remember freshman year of college, I was working on a paper. It was like 3 or 4 a.m. I was delusional with lack of sleep. And I had my Discman. And for some reason, I had a copy of Baby One More Time. And was listening to it, and the song Email My Heart came on, and I just started weeping.
Yeah, so you definitely have a bigger connection than anybody has with that song.
I don't know why I just shared that story. Anyway, it's different. Different people have different ways of working. And music is, to me, it's like a very emotional thing. And the genre, like post-punk for the most part, especially now in my life, leaves me kind of cold. Now, let's talk about Nick Cave, because Nick Cave writes some of the most direct, like, emotional lyrics that I've ever heard. So, like, yeah. I would love, actually, to hear Ice Age write a song like Into My Arms, you know, or like something like that. I think that would be, I think they could do that really, really well. But at this point, I mean, they're young, and I think they just want to show off a little bit. And that's kind of the feeling I get here. So, okay. I this is definitely an album to check out, to listen to. I think a lot of people are going to like it.
Yeah, I think so too. I think also, you know, if you liked Ice Age before, I don't see why you'd dislike him now, because I think that, you know, it's on par, if not better, than their previous work. I like the idea too. I read that, you know, they called the album Beyondless, and this idea that, I can't remember the exact quote, but this idea that basically this there's a lasting sensation to this album, whereas, you know, their need to always record after, like, they said that after the third one they took 4 years, and they almost are saying, like, after this one, like, they're so pleased with it they might take even longer.
I do actually like that song, Beyond List. I think it's the second to last track on the album. That's probably one of the standouts for me as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we came down probably the most different on an album this year.
Definitely one of them. Yeah. I had a feeling it was going to be that way. So, definitely check Beyond List out by Ice Age. I think, you know, we both recommend listening to it. Nick is a little higher on it than me, but... we'd love to hear what you guys think about it.
Yeah. And, you know, on that note, here comes the PSA. I wish I could do like a song to introduce PSA. Maybe we should work on that.
Well, if you're listening to this now, you should feel very lucky that we didn't do it at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
And that's just because we forgot.
Yeah. We'll do it next time, promise. Or the time after. Because we'll probably forget the next time.
We'll probably forget.
So, yeah, if you have any questions or comments, please email us at juiceboxmusicpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, to hear what you thought of this album or any album we've discussed, any news. If you'd like to hear anything, want us to discuss anything, please email us. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And finally, the most important, which I should probably mention earlier, please rate us and review us on iTunes or your various podcast apps. It really helps us kind of stay into the top of the iTunes store and have more people listen to us. And the more people listen to us, the more criticism we'll get, the better we'll get. I think that's kind of the circle of life.
Very well said. It's very important, those reviews, guys. So thank you very much. And thanks for listening.
All right. Yes, please. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. And on that note,
we'll see you next time.